If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Picture Brian Koberger's parents' house in Pennsylvania on the night of December 29th of 2022. Outside, snow on the ground muffles the sound of passing cars, the small town stillness broken only by the occasional gust of wind rattling through bare branches. Inside, the lights glow against the quiet, but there's no real calm in the air. A man who once styled himself as a scholar of criminal minds is pacing, flicking through his phone, his brain racing faster than his body can keep up. The screen's blue light reflects off his face, and if you could see the search terms he was typing into that tiny box, you'd understand just how much fear had taken root. Wiretap. Psychopaths paranoid. These are the search terms of Brian Koberger as police were slowly closing in on him. He isn't reading academic articles anymore. He's trying to figure out if they're listening, if someone can hear him breathe. By that point, the news has been out for weeks. Police want information about a white Hyundai Elantra. He owns one. He knows they're looking. Earlier in the day, he scrolled through the Moscow Police Department's own website, checking for updates, like someone checking the weather before a storm. And then the spiral picks up speed. He clicks into a news story about the car search, scrolls fast, double taps the black button. Then minutes later, he's on the website of an auto detailer. As if a bottle of soap in a vacuum would wash away forensic science. Minutes after that, he's shopping for a new car online. Eyes darting from model to model as if switching vehicles would untangle the web already wrapped around him. His beady little hands, the same hands his classmates had noticed weeks earlier with the bruised knuckles and fresh cuts, are now jittering on the screen, scrolling, searching, refreshing. The house itself feels like it's holding its breath. Upstairs, his parents are asleep, unaware that their son is unraveling under their roof. Downstairs, he's cycling through paranoia in real time. Every keystroke, a confession of fear. He doesn't know that outside, surveillance teams are already in place. They've tracked him across the country, watched him take the long road home, collected trash from the family's garbage bins to confirm his DNA matches. He's Googling wiretaps, but the truth is they don't need to bug his phone. They already have him. This is the image that sticks. The duality of that night. On one screen, a man desperately trying to hold control, convincing himself he's still a step ahead, scrambling for solutions that don't exist. On the other, investigators quietly tightening the circle, checking watches, waiting for the order to move in. And by 1:30 a.m., when officers stormed the house and dragged him out in cuffs, his search history was still fresh. The paranoia is still humming like static in the background, and that's where the shadows of Papa Roger account lingers. Because paranoia doesn't stay silent. It spills out into online posts, into combative arguments, in oddly specific details that shouldn't be public. Maybe law enforcement is right. Maybe it wasn't him typing under that name. But when you consider the timeline, the fixation on the sheath, the arrogant arguing that we are now learning about, the final silence just as he was arrested, the similarities feel too sharp to dismiss. And there's a lot of arguments out there. Well, he was posting after that. Prove it. There's a lot of fake names that popped up. There was a lot of fake personas that popped up in the aftermath of him being arrested. And the Papa Roger persona was already under scrutiny. It wouldn't be hard or crazy to think that other fake Papa Rogers popped up, because they did. I saw them myself. Though they said it wasn't him. Yes, and part of the reasoning they said was the IPs didn't make sense. Well, it's called a VPN, kids. In his parents' house that night, Brian Koberger couldn't stop betraying himself. The searches told the story. The fear told the story. And for some, those cryptic posts did too. The man who would eventually be charged with the murders of four University of Idaho students had been presenting himself as a criminology PhD student at Washington State University. In class, he was combative and condescending, the type of person who couldn't let criticism slide. 13 complaints had just been filed against him in just a few months. Students and professors reporting sexist, belittling remarks, intimidation, even being cornered in offices. He'd been written up for telling a deaf classmate she shouldn't procreate, for dismissing a divorced woman as broken, and for showing up late to female professors' classes with such consistency that students started keeping a tally. Faculty said he was petty, argumentative, and obsessed with proving he was the smartest voice in the room. Kind of like Papa Roger did before he got kicked out of other groups, before he had to create his own that was safe for him to comment under, if he did that. That pattern of behavior, an inability to resist conflict and a craving for validation, lines up uncomfortably well with what people saw from the Papa Roger account. Always arguing, always pushing, needing to be the center of attention in a storm of speculation. That and, oh, the profile picture looks exactly like Brian Koberger before anybody knew who Brian Koberger was. So there's that. Authorities now insist it wasn't him. I insist you didn't dig deep enough. They say that they did a deep dive, checked against digital trails, IP addresses, and found no connection. Well, tell me how you did that. Moscow PD. I'm not questioning your investigation. I'm just questioning where your conclusions stopped. That's the official story. But if you believe that answer ties everything up neatly, you're missing how paranoia leaks out in ways people don't always expect. Koberger may have been clever, but he wasn't untouchable. This is a man who understood technology well enough to swap his phone on and off during surveillance, to go dark at key moments when police later tracked his movements. Are we really supposed to think that he couldn't have masked his IP with a VPN while posting online? That's going to be the answer to the story. Well, IP didn't match. That means nothing. Technical barriers were not his downfall. It might be the downfall of Moscow PD. And you may want to dig a little deeper or get a little more in depth with your investigative skills. Hopefully you don't have to use them like this again, but hey, they're good to have. And the sheath, this is where the details and the denials really lose a lot of weight. It's not logical to guess that a killer not only used a fixed blade, but also left the sheath behind at the scene when nobody knew about it. That's not the kind of thing you just toss out casually in a chat thread. Guessing the weapon was one thing. Guessing the blunder that tied him to the crime forever is another. That detail mattered because it wasn't just speculation. It became the central piece of the evidence. His DNA was on it. It's the reason his name even rose to the top of the suspect list. So when an anonymous account drops it weeks before the affidavit goes public, an account that profile looks just like the killer, it doesn't read like foresight. It reads like leakage. Meanwhile, Koberger himself was unraveling in real time. Investigators now say that on the night of December 29th, just hours before he was arrested, he went on a string of frantic internet searches, looking up wiretap, typed in psychopaths paranoid. Psychopaths paranoid. He's defining himself as a psychopath, so desperately trying to fit in with some club. What do psychopaths do when they're paranoid? Let me see what the other psychopaths do when they're paranoid so I can do it too. This is literally how his brain is working. He clicked through to the Moscow Police Department's own website. He read news about police seeking information on the white Hyundai Elantra, the same model he owned, the same car caught on surveillance multiple times around the crime scene. Same one that got stopped twice on the way to mom and dad's. He didn't stop there. Minutes later, he was looking into an auto detailing service. 10 minutes after that, he was browsing for new cars online, eyes darting from model to model as if switching vehicles would untangle the web already wrapped around him. It's a window into a man in full spiral. He knew the car was on a weak point for him, the thread that could unravel everything. He obsessed over it, and his phone record and recorded the paranoia blow by blow. And what's a red herring, as according to Papa Roger, that isn't anything to pay attention to? A Hyundai Elantra. If you put yourself in that house in Pennsylvania on the night of December 29th, you can almost feel the air thick with dread. He's back in his childhood home, surrounded by the walls that watched him grow up. But instead of safety, he's staring at a glowing screen, refreshing police updates, realizing every detail points straight to him. He thinks maybe he can wash it away with car soap. Maybe he can buy something new and disappear into traffic. But it's too late. The sheath with his DNA was already in evidence. Surveillance teams were already outside. And when police kicked down the door in the early hours of December 30th, they weren't guessing. They knew. This is where the Papa Roger account loops back into the story, because even if we accept the official claim that it was not Koberger, the behavior still mirrors his own unraveling. The account stopped posting the very night he was arrested. Some will argue that. Well, then prove it wrong. I'm very open to seeing it being proven wrong from the same places, because there was a lot of fake ones that did pop up. And it ain't hard for people to go, well, see, he's right there. Yeah, I can do a picture too, and I can create another profile just like that. Is it the same account? We don't have that information. All traits Koberger's classmates and professors had flagged repeatedly were on full display. He was described as enjoying conflict, unable to back down from a debate, desperate to prove his intellectual superiority. The Facebook posts and the WSU complaints read like two sides of the same personality, combative in person, combative online. Authorities may prefer a tidy narrative that the suspect was isolated, caught by forensics and old-fashioned detective work. And yes, the DNA on the sheath was the smoking gun. But when you look at the totality of his behavior, the late-night Google spirals, the paranoia about wiretaps, the frantic attempts to wash away evidence, and the way an anonymous online voice seemed to know too much, you get a portrait of a man who couldn't stop himself from leaking fear into the world. The Gonzalez, Mogan, Chapin, and Cornuto families don't need speculation about online aliases. They have the reality of loss that will never be filled. And for those trying to understand who Brian Koberger was in those weeks between November 13th and December 30th, the paranoia is the through line. In Pullman, his classmates noticed the shift. Bloodied knuckles, bulky jackets, comments that the killer must have been pretty good. It's a weird thing for someone to say, Papa Roger. Online, someone calling themselves Papa Roger argued about fixed blades and red herrings. And on his phone, the search history betrays him in his own words. Wiretap, paranoid, car detailers, new cars. This is a man spiraling under the weight of his own crime. In July of 25, he stood in Boise in that courtroom and admitted guilt. No motive was revealed, no explanations offered. He declined to speak at the sentencing. Even his families wept a few feet away. Four consecutive life sentences plus 10 years. Guaranteed he'll die behind bars. Probably sooner than later. No parole, no second act, no audience left to impress. But the questions of Papa Roger linger. Not because it changes the outcome. Because it fits a pattern too neatly to ignore. Paranoia rarely hides quietly. It scratches at the edges. It spills into internet searches, awkward classroom comments, cryptic posts in online groups. Maybe authorities are right. Maybe it really wasn't him behind those posts. But if it wasn't, then what we're left with is still a story of a man who couldn't stop telegraphing his unraveling through his hands, through his arguments, through his compulsive need to be noticed. The takeaway isn't just about one account or one denial. It's about the way killers reveal themselves even when they think they're hidden. Koberger believed he was smarter than the cops, smarter than his peers, smarter than the world. But arrogance has cracks, and through those cracks, paranoia dripped out. In words, in searches, in scars on his skin. That paranoia didn't save him. It exposed him. And in the end, it told the story almost as loudly as the evidence did. And you have to ask yourself this question, too. If Papa Roger was not Koberger, then who was it? And who knew that kind of information? It was not the general public. Maybe the police? You'd think they would have come out and said that by now, though. It was us who were trying to lure him in. Just because your IP address doesn't point to a name that says Brian Koberger in big flashy lights doesn't mean it was not him. And maybe we will just never know. Because that's the point of VPNs. That's the point of secrecy. It's kind of a door that leads to a cliff. And you walk off that cliff, you don't know where you're going to land. And he knew that. And he was hiding in his anonymity, the same way he was hiding his searches, the same way he was hiding his digital trail. He was hiding then, too. Until everything imploded on that late December night. Tell me your thoughts in the comment section on YouTube. If you're not already there, search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Make that same search wherever you're downloading podcasts and press subscribe so you don't miss any of our coverage of this and the many cases we got for you right here at the Hidden Killers Podcast and True Crime Today. I'm Tony Bruschi. We will talk again.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers Podcast.
Mr. Monopoly here. Monopoly is back at McDonald's. Register in the McDonald's app so you're ready to
get your bag.
Two ways to peel for a chance to
get your bag.
Physical peels with select items and digital peels with others to
get your bag.
Play Monopoly at McDonald's.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
No purchase necessary. See rules at playatmcd.com for full details and amoe.playatmcd.com to play without purchase. Ends November 23rd, but bonus play ends November 2nd. Monopoly is a registered trademark of Hasbro. Copyright McDonald's.
It's Cybersecurity Awareness Month. LifeLock is here with tips to help protect your identity. Use strong passwords, set up multi-factor authentication, report scams, and update your software. And for comprehensive identity protection, LifeLock is your best choice. LifeLock alerts you to suspicious uses of your personal information and fixes identity theft, guaranteed, or your money back. Start your protection today with a 30-day free trial at LifeLock.com. Use promo code NEWS. Terms apply.